Welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I'm your host for today. Well, today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Richard Alter, author of Siegfried Folly. Although the book is fiction, it addresses many current issues related to the Holocaust, intolerance, prejudice, and injustice. So stay tuned, because today we're going to be covering these issues as they occur in our society now, and why some of these changes just aren't happening. But first, a little bit about Richard. Richard Alter was raised as a Lutheran German American in a small New York City suburb rife with anti-Semitism. After graduating as an English major from Cornell University, he supported himself and his family as a writer of vegetable gardening manuals from the Vermont homestead. Fueled by his ongoing search into the roots of Nazism, he studied German and Jewish history, folklore, and languages. Siegfried Folly approaches the aftermath and legacy of the Holocaust from a perspective co-equally genteel and Jewish. This is his second novel. Richard has been exhibiting painter for many, many years. In addition, he trains and competes nationally as a master swimmer. He and his new spouse live in Vermont and California. Hi, Richard.
Hello, Irene.
I'm sure glad to be talking to you today, because I know that this is going to be an interesting conversation, so I'm glad we've got listeners. Richard, you have had a long, long life quest, and it has taken you to this book, Siegfried Folly. And I just want you to tell the audience a little bit about this quest and why the interest.
I guess I've been immersed in intolerance of religion my entire life. I grew up in the New York area with a very stern, loving, but strict set of German-American grandparents. And my other grandparents were, and they were Protestant, they were Lutheran, and my other set of grandparents were in Flatbush, Brooklyn. My mother would refer to them and herself and her background as the Shanty Irish. And both sets of these people that I was kind of reared with used the worst slurs about Jews and blacks and people of color and mixed ethnic backgrounds. And it always, it was common for me in the beginning, but I never quite got this out of my system. And when I was about 10 or 12 years old, I was in this very Protestant community, suburb of New York City, but I had a really good friend who was Jewish. There were very few Jewish people in town. There was a new synagogue built, and I heard a lot of slurs and gripes about this, and I did a project for art school. I did a very elaborate watercolor rendering of the windows in the synagogue, because they were so contemporary and bright compared to the Bible stories, the very holier-than-thou, if you will, windows in my church. And a few weeks after I did this, rocks smashed the windows, and the town was very upset. Everybody was very concerned, and that triggered things, Irene, for me. Why I grew up thinking that Jews were people that you just did not want to associate with, and I wound up at Cornell University, where half of the my classmates were Jewish, and the sororities and fraternities were tightly segregated into Christian and Jewish. And of course, I was making friends with all these Jews, and I brought a beautiful Jewish girl to my first Christmas formal just to tick off my mother.
Oh, boy.
and it goes from there.
Well, that's interesting. You know, as I'm listening to you, and I'm relating back, too, as to my growing up, and the community I came from did not have black people, but there were some Jews, and of course there were other ethnic communities. And I just remember, particularly my father, just had a dislike for the Jewish people. And I kept asking him why, but he would never, ever tell me, because I'm not sure that he really knew.
These things get ingrained, and they don't get quite, you know, my family, the Germans, they were good, solid stock. You know, they were God-fearing, but they were lovely people and participated in the community. And I think when I was even a boy or approaching a teenager, I didn't think that they really meant it, you know, that they didn't, it was just part of their vernacular. And it didn't particularly bother me until I got to college age and I was stunned by learning about the Holocaust and realizing that in contemporary times, this atrocity happened. And, you know, it was so barbaric and it just seemed like, you know, medieval. How could this happen? And that's where the instigation to write and to you know, this began its internal workings for me.
Well, I certainly can understand that. And have you ever figured out as to where this all came from, like in particularly in your family? And, you know, I've thought about this about in my family and why there was such a discrimination against the Jewish people. Have you ever, you know, been able to pinpoint where it started, let's say, in your family?
No. I could only say that all of the Protestants on my father's side married Catholic girls, and all of my mother's Catholic siblings married Protestants. And as a young adult, I thought, well, that was their form of rebelling. You know, it was getting to be crazy in their generation for, Catholics and Protestants to revile each other. I mean, wakes and weddings weren't gone to. I actually thought, Irene, when I remember I had a lovely Aunt Mary who was a devoted Catholic, and when I was about 6-7 years old, I actually thought if she touched me, I would turn into a Catholic, and that would be the greatest horror. But in terms of anti-Semitism, I won't repeat what I mentioned just before, that I think it is so ingrained that it's invisible to any of us who are brainwashed, I guess, from childhood. You know, in the case of Jews in Germany, I mean, there are a lot of things that we came to understand once we read, and I did, and learned more, that, Jews were really kind of taking over the country. They ran the banks and the financial institutions, and they were the powerhouse intellects and so on. But I think I that's the best I can do with your question.
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned that, and I remember talking to my father, and the only thing that he could come up with was he said that it's because they own businesses. And so I looked at him and I said, but didn't everybody else have an opportunity to own a business? You chose, your family chose to be, you know, have farmland and to farm rather than to be in business. And he just, like, he looked at me like he didn't even understand what I was saying. He was just, it was so ingrained that because they owned businesses that, you know, you're not to like them.
I would say that, I'm thinking out loud, that a lot of Christians have an inferiority complex because Jews, in many of our lives, are brighter, smarter, more cultured. I certainly felt this at Cornell University, a major institution, and I was immediately intimidated by my Jewish classmates. They were from, whether they were from New Trier High School in Chicago or Scarsdale, New York, or the really, well-heeled suburbs, they were so much better prepared than I was. They were better prepared than the prep school kids. And I don't think that's inherent in being a Jew. I think it's that the Jewish culture has taken education and, brain work seriously, so that generation after generation, it seems, according to many of my friends, Jewish families place such a high regard on learning and being serious in school and so on. So that's another factor.
Yes, and I have to agree with you that, because I do have a lot of Jewish friends too, and that's exactly what you're saying, is, you know, they place education extremely high, and it's important. And I'm sure that that's something that was ingrained into them for many generations also, because that's the only way that they could survive at some point.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could take their brains with them.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
But when I went to Israel, I mean, I found regular people who weren't, you know, they were farmers and truckers and school teachers and all kinds of people and average Joes, if you will.
Uh-huh.
So I carried in my early years a lot of this, you know, stereotype in my head about the Jews being superior. I do think I figured out early on as an adult that there was a lot of inferiority, you know, in my family. And that was one of the causes to put these people down.
Mine too, so I can really relate to what you're saying. So, Richard, do you think that there could ever be another Holocaust?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes?
I definitely think so.
That's a scary thought.
Well, I know. It's just that, unfortunately, I read the New York Times every day, and, you know, the slaughter and the massacres that still go on all over the place, and, you know, unfortunately, the remarks of the Ahmadinejad, the Iranian leader, saying such horrible things about Israel and Jews in general and denying the Holocaust, I definitely feel like there could be some tripping mechanism that, you know, if Iran gets the bomb, for example, I mean, and they don't, maybe they would think of it as one grand sacrifice, like a suicide bomber, only doing away with all of Israel, knowing that they, in turn, would be annihilated. I mean, I think that there is that capacity, unfortunately, right here in the 21st century.
Yeah, and as I say, that's a scary thought, isn't it?
I'm not as well acquainted enough with the details of Rwanda and the African nations when, you know, there's civil wars and there's mass slaughter and, this is going on in countries that I don't think we hear as much about. Could it happen in France or, you know, Brazil or something? No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
But when you get to Iran and Israel, it's getting pretty close to as sophisticated and warlike as you can be on both sides.
Exactly, on both sides. And I just have a hard time personally to understand all that. So that brings me to the next thing. You know, right now in the news, you turn on the news and it's just constantly we're bombarded with information and opinions. That's in uppercase opinions, on the building of the mosque at Ground Zero.
Hmm.
Do you have any comments, feelings? What's going on?
Well, I'm basically an optimist, Irene. I mean, I'm more container half full than half empty, even though I answered your question about is another Holocaust possible. I just read the other day in the paper that actually when Obama and Mayor Bloomberg in New York came out in favor of the mosque at Ground Zero, this made huge news worldwide and very, very much a pro-American shot in the arm that the leader of the nation and the leader of New York City would say, you know, America stands for freedom of religion. And so when I say I'm fairly optimistic, it's that for all the yelling and naysaying and the Islamophobia, I guess it's termed, I think that's a healthy venting if that darn guy in Florida doesn't burn the Quran this weekend. But that basically to lance the boil of prejudice and bigotry is probably healthier, you know, in America at least, to let these maniacs rant and rave. And the majority of well-meaning people and sensible people will come around to seeing that invective for what it is and say, okay, of course, bottom line, America stands for freedom I mean, so as awful as it sounds, that poor general Petraeus in Afghanistan, you can imagine what's going through the leaders' minds, and if this maniac in Florida actually has this public burning of Korans, and then that gets plastered all over the Middle East and the world, it's horrible. I feel very mixed.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. We're speaking today with Richard Alford. He is the author of Siegfried Follies. He can be found on SiegfriedFollies.com. And as you've heard so far, we are getting into some really interesting societal issues. So stay tuned because there's more. I'm very mixed about this guy in Florida, too, because he's terming himself as a Christian, but from my understanding, what Christianity is, it's love and tolerance, acceptance. I don't see any of that.
There was a great interview the other day on NPR, mm-hmm. and there's a new bestseller, a preacher in the South who had a megachurch, and he's turned his back on this, and he's written what's becoming a bestseller because he's saying, all of this materialism and bigger and better and SUVs and huge homes and extravagant lifestyle, it's not the spirit of what Jesus was teaching. You know, the church itself, you know, the Vatican's on that side of the fence, everything's out of control, and that the basic messages of the Bible and certainly of the figure of Jesus, it's modern religion, at least Christianity, it can be practiced counterproductively to what it's all about. And that people should, you know, try to, if they make $50,000, live on that or make more, give it away in the spirit of the Bible. So in that sense, I've wandered a little from your question, but I do think that, it's possible to have some alternate good come out of what seems immediately so awful.
You know, I sure hope so. And I've been listening to different opinions and on CNN, and, you know, everybody's got so much opinions, and they're just like, they're so strong about it. But one question that has never been asked of these people that are so opinionated against the mosque is, if somebody had chosen to build a Christian-based church, would we have the same issues coming up?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I haven't heard anybody ask that
mm-hmm.
or talk about it. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, it's a big issue in America right now about church and state separation, you know, and Sarah Palin and a lot of the folks on that end of the political spectrum are saying this is one nation under God. And you have a lot of historians and scholars on the other hand saying that's bunk. I mean, the church is not mentioned at all in the Constitution. It was almost like a phrase, a figure of speech, and they've blown it way out of proportion, and it wasn't intended that the real point of the Constitution was to have freedom of religion. This was a huge, huge reason for starting the country. So You're right, though. I mean, if there was a big cathedral put up, you know, a half a block from Ground Zero, it would probably be applauded. But I really think it's going to blow over, and it's just the hot, you know, news item of the day. Bigotry and intolerance isn't blowing over, however.
No, it isn't. And so, you know, let's talk about that. Why is, you know, it isn't being blown over, and it's been around for a long time, and it seems that it's not getting any better.
I get a little pessimistic on this one, Irene, because I think unless people are co-equally educated, you know, unfortunately for the mass of people, they do not have the encouragement or the means to see beyond their tribe, their community, and fear of the other is so ingrained in humanity. I mean, really, this does go back, you know, millennia. And there, you know, the Turks and the Greeks and I think it's all this real estate, you know, arguing. I think the land is actually, the real estate's more to be regarded as a factor here than religion, because people have been squabbling over land. That's what Israel is all about, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the face of religion and holy sites, but basically, I mean, you know, people have been fighting wars since recorded history over boundaries. And my goodness, this is still going on in the Middle East. Boy, this is a tough one.
Yeah.
I think it's the fear, the need to identify ourselves without being overwhelmed by external sources. You know, let me try to put it another way. If we're really grounded within ourselves, we can be so much more tolerant of people who are different. But if you don't have that level of sophistication, education, awareness, I don't know quite what to call it, then, you know, people on the other side of the river are a threat. They happen to practice another language and religion to boot. So I think that, if from recorded history, it's really more in this prejudice has its roots in diversity and geopolitical and issues.
You know, and I agree with you on that, because I really think that if we ourselves personally are secure within ourselves, then we have that tolerance for others, and we can accept others for who they are. You know, and that's what I'm hearing you say too. I believe that, and I really think that what's going on right now is just there is that intolerance because people are so insecure within themselves, and there's just a lot of it is so fear-based. So your book, Freed Folly. Okay, so it goes into all kinds of stuff, as I'm going to call it, is what we talked about just now. And so I want you to just tell our listeners a little bit more about your book and how it really relates to what you've written and all your 25 years of research to what is still going on right now.
I think of the book as really autobiographical. There are two main characters and a third, two boys, two orphans who find each other in the bomb ruins of the war, and they really rescue each other, one a Jew and one a blonde German boy, and they don't know about their respective backgrounds, and they make a home for each other, and the book follows them forward for 30 years. I created the character Franz because, in fact, I did have an early background in the business world that was in advertising and marketing, and you know, here I was overeducated at an Ivy League school, but I had and an English major, no less, with no specific job training, and so I wound up being a advertising copywriter on Madison Avenue because I could write, and I had a command of a language. Anyway, I think I created this character who gets to America and tries to fulfill his American dream. And I really feel there's a salesman in almost everybody in America. I think it's based on salesmanship and presentation skills, whether you're running a hospital, a university, whether you're a grammar school teacher. Most people are getting up in front of others or dealing with them somehow and presenting a point of view. Getting it across. It's not just a literal salesman, as we think of that term. But everybody in this culture is kind of wired that way. I lived in England for 3 years, and I found not that quality whatsoever. It's totally lacking in the British. So that's Franz. He gets as a teenager from Germany over to America, and he's learning English language by studying the ads and all the magazines and so forth. And he comes across as a bit of a dunce, you know, and he eventually begins to suffer a lot of self-doubt if he could really make it as an American. The other character, the Jewish boy, he grows up, and his whole goal in life is to find out what it means to be a Jew. And the book takes him on a journey from a kibbutz in Israel to the Israeli army and an all-American Jewish suburban family and so on. And he's an intellectual, really. He studies voraciously. He keeps trying to figure out what made the hatred of Jews so horrific in his lifetime, and discovers that it has been going on, you know, since the beginning of recorded time, that the Jews were expelled in the 1200s to 1500s from every nation in Europe, and they were burned and they were vilified everywhere, way before Hitler. So Jay, his name is Jay, he represents, you know, my intellectual curiosity and that side of me that thinks and behaves very much like him. So they're polar opposites in the book, and yet they, for me personally, you know, they came out of my head, and they really represent a bit of a crossfire in my own life as I went from writing really stupid commercials in New York to the point where I was writing this kind of stuff in Vermont for the Stowe Ski Area or the Baroness von Trapp or various companies, where there was no baloney in the ad. It was honest to goodness stuff. And I did a lot in the gardening field. So I still identify a lot with, you know, the idea of, you know, we've got to stand up and be heard in this country. We have to know how to pitch. The woman in the that marries Franz and gets very, very involved emotionally with Jay, she represents my Irish Catholic background, and she's all heart. She's all heart and very, very open to people and children and ideas, and so she's far more emotional in her range than either of the men. And so I guess that came out of that part of me that is curious enough about people that I'm a novelist. And that's, I read fiction, not nonfiction. That was a long answer, Irene. Sorry.
Well, you know, as I'm listening to what you're talking about, I can really see that a lot of readers with parallel to your characters.
Well, there are three characters. It's not a solo journey here. And I when I began writing this, Irene, so many years ago, and by the way, it's a third of the volume that it was many years ago, I've kept writing. And I keep learning to self-edit and throw things out. And I really think that less is more now, as the phrase goes, that I've been able to teach myself enough about the craft to want to keep working on this book, about which I got a lot of encouragement from professionals in the business and writers and editors when I submitted it much earlier, and I'm very happy that it's finally being published, but in a more polished story and more, I hope, more compelling than anything I did at the beginning.
Richard,
yes.
Your website address.
My website address. Well, there is a website for the novel. It went live this past week, and it's www.siegfriedfollies.com. And a little tricky, I mean, it's S-I-E-G-F-R-I-E-D, Siegfried Follies, one phrase, .com. And on there, we've got an interview that's been already done, and about six or eight initial reviews, some summation of the story, and actually there's a direct link on there to Amazon for purchasing as well.
Good. Well, thank you. Thank you, Richard. This has been a really interesting conversation, and I know that our listeners are still tuned in because they themselves are probably just sort of rattling around in their mind as to where are they themselves? How do they feel about the Holocaust, the prejudices, overcoming intolerance, all these things that are actually, you know, your book is about. And so I encourage the listeners to go to your website, Siegfried Follies. It's S-I-E-G-F-R-I-E-D, Follies, F-O-L-L-I-E-S.com. Browse around and really consider reading this book because I know that it's going to make you think. Again, Richard, thank you so much.
Thank you, Irene,
being on this show.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All best to you.
Thank you. And this is Irene Watson for Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening.